radio station, your radio station, our radio station, 91.3 FM and 95.8 FM stereo.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Good evening, Khuyanand, Mulwani, and a hearty welcome to the Shahida Kali Show. So I'm so excited because Wednesday luckily comes quickly, and before I know it, I can get a chance to speak with you and chat, and we can have tea together, and we can just have fun together. But, you know, amidst doing that, we sometimes have to speak about tough situations, you know, situations that really test that we can become bigger and better, you know, than we believe ourselves to be. One of such is when you're confronted with cancer and you need to shift from a cancer patient to a cancer survivor. So the great thing is, in the studio this evening, again, we have Faisal Jacobs, who is a cancer survivor, and he is going to share more of his journey with us this evening. Faisal, assalamu alaikum, and welcome back.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, and shukran for having me.
So I'm very excited because I know that the, you know, the purpose of you being here, of me doing the program, is really to encourage, to inspire, to educate, to uplift, you know.
Exactly.
Especially people who are in a tough situation in regard to cancer. Even the person afflicted with a cancer or has the cancer diagnosis, as well as the family, isn't
for
it?
Sure. For
the
sure.
loved ones, eh? But before we get to any of the what we plan to do, we need to go to an exciting occurrence that happened, of which you were involved today. And I thought, you know what, it's so special that we needed to give it special time. Please just tell us what happened and your involvement, please.
So as part of my journey, I registered a non-profit organization called Lace Up for Change, and we use sport as a medium to facilitate change within impoverished communities, to try and uplift and just give people their dignity and empower people. And about 6 months ago almost, we started an initiative for the third school, where we participated in endurance events. Two of our guys, for example, took part in the Cape Town Marathon. And this was all to raise funds for school shoes. And alhamdulillah, today we were at Rio Grande in Manenberg, and we fitted almost 700 students or pupils with a brand new pair of school shoes.
Wow.
Each one got a home meal, a sandwich.
Yeah.
And it was just such an amazing day, alhamdulillah. And shukran to everybody that supported the initiative, whether it was with a donation or the crew, as we call them, that rolled up their sleeves and got their hands dirty to make today the success that it was, alhamdulillah.
Yeah. Congratulations, Slamat, and we, you know, one has to say shukran to the creator. You know, we look at the mercy of the thoughts that had been, you know, given to you, your crew, the commitment, and everyone was a part of it. Really, really,
for sure.
One wants to congratulate them for caring about others.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Hey,
it's so empowering to be able to help someone. And you know, I used to have a very good job. I was earning good money. My children could get whatever it is they wanted. We went away for weekends and that. And the amount of money I was making doesn't come close to that smile. Or when you hear a little girl says, "Buy a donkey worm." Now my granny doesn't have to use the SASSA money to buy me school shoes. Yeah. There's no amount of money that can do that. The smiles, and one of the greatest forms of baraka is that smile.
Absolutely.
And it is, it's just so heartwarming.
Yeah. It brings back the thoughts. I was working at Alexandra Hospital, and I would have of my patients there, the thought goes to a lady who used to come to me in wintertime, and she would be walking bare feet. So I thought, why? And I, not. So these are all intellectually disabled persons. And in trying to get her, to get myself to understand why. So I took her to the ward, because they would come to the building where we were. Mm-hmm. I took her to the ward and I asked if she needed to show me her shoes. And the shoes, if she had a size 7 foot, her shoes was about size 4.
Wow.
Seriously, I'm not exaggerating here. Jo, dit maak my mens hartseer.
Baie seer.
Jo. You know, and I think also at that time, we adopted wards, and by Allah, the support that we got, and we could also buy shoes for all the patients. And you had circumstances where a patient doesn't wear a panty. You want to find out why, and the panty is too small. It hurts too badly. So yeah, dit maak bitter seer, but the good thing is when you're able to change that,
sure.
You know. Yeah, it's lekker. It's a good feeling.
And a buyer lekker feeling.
Yeah, and so I can absolutely understand. And what I just want to, and I know we're going to go back to where it started, but I just want to ask you. So you would still have your challenges today,
yeah.
Right now. You know, you would still have
correct.
Your challenges. What does a day like today do in relation to how you manage your own challenges?
I think the biggest lesson for me is that, and doing the type of work that we do within the community, there are people that are worse off. I mean, it sounds cliche. Here they go again. But it really is. And the challenges that I face is nothing compared to what we've seen out on the streets. And I'm grateful. And every time I have to change a bag, and yes, there's times I get frustrated with a bag with a leak when I'm out in public, or having to try and hide and conceal the fact that the bag is filled with air and the security in Pick and Pay doesn't think I've got something shoved down my pants over there. It's so small in the greater scheme of things.
Yeah.
And it's daily, this bag and the stoma is a reminder that life in itself is precious. And don't take for granted the little that you perceive you have.
Yeah. In fact, one of the questions, on my way here or before the conversation that we're having now, one of the questions I had in my mind to ask you is what your thoughts are if anyone has a difficulty, a challenge. Now, given that for us, our challenge would be sore, would be hard, would be heart sore, etc. But what your thoughts are in relation to try to think of someone who's worse off than you, and what that would give you?
I think my personal approach, and I said it last week as well, it's important to allow yourself to feel what it is you are feeling. But the ability to take that step back, step out of your mind, so to speak, where you can have a look, a realistic look, because if you look properly, you will see an inspiration around you. You will see a reason to get up and dust yourself off. You will find a reason that, you know what, it's not that bad.
So what you're saying is find the blessings.
Find the blessings.
The blessings are all there. And we'll get back to that. And because I tie it so much into if at a time when it's really, really hard and you remind yourself of which of the favors of my Lord am I going to deny? But let's get back to, so a part of today's conversation is to have someone listening identify with the feelings that you felt And the reason for that is very often people will say, I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel, or I don't know what I'm feeling. They can be very confused, very overwhelmed. And in speaking with you, you have the ability to normalize even those tough feelings, you know, as a start, so that we can say, you know what, you have a right to feel those feelings. This is how human beings would feel.
For sure.
So when you got so I know there were a few days leading up to confirmation of cancer, your diagnosis, the management, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want for you to describe again what it felt like when you realized something's not the normal response, what that looked like and what it felt like.
I think, yeah, it's, if I can put it into words, and the words almost doesn't justify what those emotions are. So when you hear cancer, and like I said, there was one of the phenomena that happened is that word cancer, very often people sign a death warrant.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of my feelings as well. And it was my children. Am I going to see them grow up? They were 9 and 11 at the time. My late mom, you know, what's going to happen with her? I was taking care of her. She wasn't well. And work all of a sudden was on the back burner. I loved my job. I thought nothing of pulling a 12, 13-hour day, long hours. I loved it. That was nowhere near on the radar, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And
so on the radar really was, it sounds to me, mostly the concern for others.
It was mostly
your loved ones.
My love, exactly. I don't think there was a point of, oh my word, I'm dying.
Mm-hmm.
Although I felt like, yes, this is the end.
Mm-hmm.
But it was more a case of what's going to happen to them. Who's going to be taking care of them? My boys, are they going to grow up losing touch with the family? It's just all centered around that.
Okay.
And the grief cycle, if anybody, it's like a curve.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit this point where, and I can almost say, alhamdulillah, I could almost feel myself going into this depression. And as much as I was questioning my creator, why me? What did I do to deserve this? I'm a good man. I do my bit for those less fortunate. At the time, I was chairperson of the Thornton Islamic Society. I was busy in negotiations with the city, dealing directly with the mayor of Cape Town, Patricia de Lille at the time, about acquiring land to build a masjid in Thornton. And that is almost a form of jihad. Why are you punishing me? You know, that conversation was there. It was real. And a lot of people say, yeah, but you must sabr, and this is Allah's will. I'm human.
And on that, I just want to ask, whilst you are in a state of the depression, like you say, and you're asking why, so when people say, but you must sabr, but does it mean, it's almost like one has to separate it, man, you get sabr and sabr. So it's like, I want to ask you, did it at any time mean that you were kind of intentionally having an angry approach to the Creator and saying,
no,
you don't have a right, but that it almost is just me in my human being space that I am?
For me, certainly it was a case of me being in that human being space.
Mm-hmm.
I know of people that got completely angry. And you can't blame them. And a lot of people are going to, but how can you say that? We are human. We all have our faults. And, you know, nobody's perfect. You cannot understand, unless you've been through it, you cannot understand the emotions that happen. And for me, again, the risk is suppressing what it is you are feeling.
Okay.
Because that bottles up. We all had that mom that went, What are you crying about? I'll give you a reason to cry. Mm-hmm. Boy meets girl, they fall in love, they break up. The boy gets told, ugh, there's many women out there, or the girl gets told, men are all dogs. And, you know, suppress your feelings, suppress your feelings. And today we have a time where the levels of depression and suicides has increased to an alarming level. And I believe it's because we're not allowing ourselves to
feel what it is
we need to feel, because that's how we learn to process.
Yeah.
That's how we grow.
It's a part of working through it. And I was just thinking, you know, if we can acknowledge that anger is one of the stages of loss.
Yeah.
It's one of the stages of loss. But I wanted to come back to, because I jumped before we, you know, started our conversation, I wanted to ask you, how would you have described yourself and your coping personality before this had happened, before the diagnosis of cancer?
I think I was always in the work circles, I was always referred to as Mr. Fix-It.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always go to sort of a systems and process-driven personality to try and get things fixed. And in hindsight, it probably stood me in good stead.
Of course,
stead.
Because you would very quickly go to, so what do I do?
Yeah, what do I need to do? One of the things I did is I started to Google, and the first lot of results came up, and I closed my laptop. Oh, hell no, I'm not doing this. You know, and coming from an IT background, I know that on Google you will find 100 pros to say that this Huawei phone is the best out there, and you'll find 100 cons to say, no, you don't. And it's the same in the medical side.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, no, I can't do this. I can't put myself through this.
And is that because there were such a lot of contradictory information?
Yeah.
Which then confuses you?
Yeah. I mean, okay. Part of, so if we go forward, just before I got to the diagnosis is confirmed, I saw myself as I'm in for a fight. I don't know how bad this fight is going to be. We got to wait on the cancer diagnosis. And the Friday came and it was confirmed. You got cancer. Now I knew I'm fighting cancer. But then the doctor says, we don't know how bad this cancer is yet. We have to do a CT scan. And so the shape starts forming in terms of what this fight is. Then it is, it's sort of like looking at a blurred, very, very blurred image. You can start making out shapes, but you don't know what it is you're going to have to stand up against.
Okay.
And as things unfolded.
And so I'd like you to hold that thought, because we need to go into the time for the Maghrib prayer. And I'd like you to hold the thought, because the question I'd like to ask is, and what helped you through that time when, as a fixer, you need to know what the problem is and then there's an answer. Now you're in a space where you don't quite know.
No. Yeah.
So please hold the thought. We'll be back after Maghrib.
My radio station, your radio station, our radio station, the voice of the Cape.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and good evening. I'm Shahida Khali and I'm speaking with Faisal Jacobs, who is a cancer survivor, and our focus is on Faisal's process, and Faisal's sharing his process so that it can normalize the process of others who could be very confused at this time. It could, you know, be wanting, and he is wanting to inspire, to educate, to really uplift, but to have a, to impart positive coping skills that he had applied that worked for him, that holds the potential that it will help our listeners as well, whomever's going through a tough time. So welcome back, Faisal.
Shukran. I'd just like to say one thing, and this is my view, and the term cancer survivor, I think we need to redefine that term, because a cancer survivor isn't someone who has beaten cancer. A cancer survivor, if you get diagnosed today and you wake up tomorrow, you're a survivor. A person living with cancer is a survivor. And they are fighters. And that's why, for me, we need to redefine the term cancer survivor. It's not someone who has beaten cancer.
Right. I mean, and I think it's a very important point that you're making in terms of, in a person's journey with cancer, you could be cancer-free and live with being cancer-free, and cancer could come back later. So that happens. Yeah. I think that the term cancer survivor is used probably because of which word do we put there.
Yeah.
You know, and so a survivor is someone who's the fighter who beats, you know, whatever that they are confronted with and so on. So, yeah, I think it's just for want of a better description.
No, for sure, for sure.
So, but a very important point that you're making there in any case. So let's just come back. We were discussing, you know, the different emotions and how important it was for you to acknowledge emotions, whereas you would have described yourself as a Mr. Fix-It, a person who's process-driven. In that picture, a person could very easily denial, suppression of feelings, because you go as a habit quickly to, I need to fix it, you know. But you speak about the importance of acknowledging and feeling those feelings.
No, yeah? for sure. It's, as I was saying off-air a little earlier, I have... So I always think that the best way to describe things is through metaphors. And the same applies to feelings. And I will have, there's two places I like a lot that gives me a lot of peace and tranquility. And one is the beach and the other one is the campsite. And when I'm facing a challenge that sits in my head, that's consuming every thought of me, I have what I call a campfire.
Okay. And that would look like what?
It's me sitting around that fire and I invite these feelings in.
Okay.
Come, sit down. Let us have a conversation here. And as much as there was this, I need to find the process that's going to work. So I looked up, as I said earlier, on Google, trying to find materials. The doctor gave me some literature to read and I started putting that all away, because you start building perceptions on what could be. And speaking to other people that have had cancer, it's like there were differences in people's journeys. Let's use a movie as an example. There's a new movie coming out on circuit. You read a review. They say it's a great movie. You go and watch it. You didn't enjoy it. We experience things differently. And very quickly, I came to realize that this could be different for me too. So do I pin my hopes on what it is I'm reading here, whether it is good news or the bad news that I'm hearing about and reading about? Experience this moment, Faisal.
What would you say to yourself when in that moment would be the fear, the I don't know. Remember, if you miss to fix it, you need to know in order to fix. So the not knowing, the waiting period, what helped at those times?
We were chatting about this just before we went off, where I started getting this figure of something that I needed to fight. And as the prodding and the probing, because any cancer patient out there will know and they will testify to the fact that your body no longer is your own. Your thoughts are no longer your own. Your body is being prodded and probed. your thoughts are people telling you what you need to do to fix and get better and all those things. I needed to step out of that mentally so that I could cope. And not knowing what I needed to do to fix this was not easy, because that's my default. And I used this fight, and again, I put a metaphor to it. And I'm getting into a boxing ring, and I've got this shadow, and I've got to fight that shadow. And as the diagnosis unfolded, the shadow started becoming a shape, mm-hmm. and it started, until I knew exactly what it is I was facing.
So what happened? Because you need to pace yourself through all of this, right? Because this actually happens over days, you know, if not weeks as well. What helps you to cope with every day and going through that? Was it a matter of living? People will say, we take it one day at a time, but I know there are times when you have to take it one walk at a time, one moment at a time. What was your journey like for you?
On many levels, it was frustrating. Mm-hmm. I spoke to my family, loved ones, friends, and it was a case of, I am going to trust my Creator. As much as I was questioning, I'm going to trust that my Creator is guiding the medical team. I'm going to listen to every bit of info that the medical team is giving me. Mm-hmm. This is what you need to do to get better. This is the treatments that.
So at some stage, like you said earlier on, you actually have to pull yourself away from everyone's comments and guidance, and DNC Sober and DNC Visterk and DNC Majid Mudunsus says Muna Khadunat.
I got the Antifosi's cousin's daughter had a stoma that was supposed to get one 15 years ago. She refused, and she's still here today. And
so you actually have to step back.
And meanwhile, mm-hmm. Today I can say meaning well.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you that question.
People didn't respect that.
And at the time, you're not able to think they meaning well, isn't it?
No, it's very difficult. It is very difficult to in that moment, because
even if you remind yourself, hey,
it's you are filled again with so many emotions from my children, my mother, am I dying? Who am I fighting? Am I going to need chemo? How bad is the chemo going to be? Am I going to lose my hair? And, you know, all these sorts of things. And then you have people coming through. And again, they mean well. But there is so much happening for the patient, for the family. The family sits with the fears of losing that person. And it's a tense situation.
I mean, I think it's a panic situation, isn't it? I think more so if the answers are not clear, if the interventions are not clear, that period must, I mean, it's, people will say the worst is not knowing.
Yeah.
If I know, then I can work with that. People need to know to work with that.
For sure.
And then there are people who will say, I don't want to know. I'm okay if I don't know. Just kind of steer me. And they completely trust the medical staff, and they're just going to allow people to. There's different ways of coping, isn't it?
And again, if every one of us are individuals.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned it last week, where I said when there is a terrorist attack and there's a Muslim involved, and all of Muslims are terrorists, and you get the posts on Facebook and the social media, it's like, not in my religion, not in my Islam. Mm. You want to be treated as an individual then. We are individuals here too.
Absolutely. Hey, that is so true. So coming back to, what did it look like when you told yourself, I need to trust Allah? So what I'm looking for is, did you do things? Did you steer your thoughts? What would you tell yourself? Was there a lot of self-talk, you know, in that picture? Please share with us.
So 2 weeks from having the first colonoscopy to say, oops, something don't look right here, 2 weeks later, I had the operation. So things happened very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the conversation was, yes, I'm going to trust the Almighty. I had the negotiation as part of the grief cycle,
mm-hmm.
or the trauma cycle,
yeah.
where, Ya Allah, please help me beat this. And if my story, my journey can inspire one person, alhamdulillah,
mm-hmm.
that grief cycle isn't an all-flowing curve. And that happens. You jump up and down.
Yeah. That's what I was going to ask you. You know, was it kind of an up and down situation?
You're running back up. You run back into denial, where you didn't, no, it can't be cancer. No, man, this is a bad dream. To, what am I going to do here? I need to trust my creator. It's not always going to be a smooth process.
Yeah. So it's being all over the place most of the time.
And it became very important to find that, what am I going to fight for here?
Yeah.
And what helped me shortly after the surgery, and you got the prognosis that, alhamdulillah, I didn't need chemotherapy or radiotherapy. We caught the cancer very early.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the oncologist saying, your surgeon, Dr. Kassir, was a little bit over the top here, and pardon the expression, he was rather anal, but he'd biopsied 19 different nodes in the area to make sure he got it all.
Wow, it's stunning when you know that the person was so thorough, isn't it?
Exactly. Hey? Wow. And you know, even him, during that first 2 weeks, I hated him. But he gave me this bad news. But today he's my buddy.
I can only imagine.
That was good news, and sharing this with people. And then the offer, do you want to go and run the Chicago Marathon to raise funds for a pediatric oncology hospital being built in Palestine? And yes, not realizing it's 5 months later. But I found my fight. I found my reason to fight that was beyond my boys and my mom.
So coming back to, and I can only imagine, because I wanted to ask you now, what were those reasons to fight? But I wanted to firstly ask you, did at any time when you were trusting Allah, and we know there's a cut of time before you fall asleep with the anesthetics. There is the cut of time. Don't go beyond that. So it's like my last need to be my shahada, my last need to be. I mean, you know, I think, you know, most of us go through that. But coming out of that, because then the anesthetics take over, when did calm at any time settle inside of you? And let's hold the thought. We need to take commercial news. When we come back, we'll get the response.
Sure. Live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape. The Voice of the Cape.
I'm speaking with Faisal Jacobs, who is a cancer survivor, and Faisal had, suggested we think differently about the word survivor, because survivor means I've beat it, whereas cancer gets beaten and can come back. So, but let's go back to Faisal. I asked you before the break, I was going to ask you, when would a feeling of calm, you know, when would that feeling have come into and settled within yourself? But then in the break time, you telling me about all these ups and downs and unknowns and unpreparedness, etc., etc. And I'd like you to actually share it with our listeners because it brings about the understanding of the reality so that if someone's listening at this time, they know you said, I had to accept that there will be those things I will not be prepared for.
Yeah.
So please.
So calm was just a phase, so to speak. You phase in and out of different phases and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And if we take a step back to when I got confirmation of the diagnosis, and I'm sure I was there. I'm sure Dr. Kassir gave a beautiful explanation as to what it is I can expect with the surgery that's going to happen and so forth. But all I heard at that moment was blah, 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 blah. Because it's confirmed. It's cancer. And that was foremost on my mind. 3 days before the surgery. So the surgery was the Monday. The Friday, I met, it's my second wife now, Sister Monica Frank. That's my stoma nurse. An amazing woman. And again, I'm sure she did a beautiful explanation as to what life with a stoma bag is going to be like and what I can expect. Mm-hmm. And still, it was just blah, 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 blah. I remember her showing me the bags.
Yeah.
And then she marked me up to where the stoma's got to be placed. This is the point for the surgeon. And the Monday, waking up in ICU, the first thing I did, where's this bag?
Mm-hmm.
And I look down and I lift the sheets and I freak out. There's this big, clear, almost as big as a black bag
mm-hmm.
that you use in the bin,
mm-hmm.
clear bag, and there's this green gunk coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no,
yeah.
this is not what I remembered a bag, and it
yes.
was a lot smaller than this. This
yeah.
is not supposed to be it. I freaked out. Then they calmed me down. No, this is just a temporary bag. We need to be able to monitor what comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And Monica told me afterwards, I said to her, listen, you could have freaking told me about this thing.
Sure.
She says, no, I did.
Okay, okay.
No, I did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, and in the hospital, I pick up an infection. And it was the surgery was the Monday. It was the Saturday morning. The physio comes in and it's a locum.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen her the whole week. She comes in, Mr. Jacobs, time for your walk. And I say to her, can we do this later, please? I'm really not feeling well.
Mm-hmm.
And her first, all you men are such babies.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, and I got up and we start shuffling. And I was the second bed from the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to the first bed and I pointed. Didn't want to open my mouth.
Yeah.
And holding my hand there.
Yeah.
And she brings this little kidney bowl and I just spewed all over.
Yeah.
And I just said to her, I guess I'm not a baby anymore. And I turned around and I went back. And
yeah.
it actually turned out that the drain in the anus region
yes.
had twisted around one of the stitches.
Yeah.
And because of the anesthetic that was there and it was long, I never felt that discomfort.
Yeah.
And it was only afterwards that we picked that up. Then, you know, things started happening. You get discharged from hospital and you're home. You're in your own space. It's a safe space.
Yeah.
It's your private space. And the first time I need to change a bag happens and I can't get this bag to clip on.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how. And another freak out.
Yeah.
And another moment. And the nurse had to come and she showed me how and then it became easier and I'm calm.
Yeah.
I'm happy. I'm content. 8 weeks later, I go back to work. And 3 days at work, I'm in a boardroom. We're having a meeting. I get up and I'm too close to the table and my bag gets caught on the edge of the boardroom table.
Mm-hmm.
And the bag pops loose and stuff runs out.
Yeah.
And another freak out.
Yeah.
And I quickly learned that, you know what? You're going to have to fix a lot of things you don't know about.
I think at that point it would be different, but now looking back at those times, it asks of a person certainly to be strong, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, you've got to overcome things that you wouldn't have dreamt you'd have to experience, and what might, if you read about it, if someone else told you it happened to them, you might have thought, oh golly, I won't cope.
Mm.
And yet, you have to cope.
Yeah. I think a message out there to the listeners. Number one, I often get asked, how do you stay so positive?
Yeah.
And when I say, I'm not always this positive.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And again, I allow myself to feel what I need to feel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, alhamdulillah, last year I remarried.
Alhamdulillah.
And it was also something I never thought would happen again. I mean, who'd want to be with a man with his bag?
In fact, in our next program, I would like us to speak about the now and going forward in terms of, because my thoughts would have been, you are achieving things and experiencing things today that you could never have at that time.
Yeah.
Thought that might.
Yeah.
You know, you spoke earlier on about the different, you flit out of, if that's the right word, out of the different feelings.
Yeah.
At that time, I'm sure you wouldn't have thought that happiness will be one of those.
No. And again, there's a lesson there too. So firstly, how do you stay so positive?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not always that positive. And I allow myself to feel what it is I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Have that campfire. Are you going to stay or aren't you going to stay, Mr. Feeling?
Yeah.
Right? The second thing is accepting the situation. And I think that is most important, is once you accept and you realize, and in my instance, accepting the fact that there is going to be a lot of things that are out of your control, no matter how much you prepare for it. We were chatting off-air about a travel incident I had last year when we went to Casablanca. And I had prepared by having extra bags in case with my carry-on luggage, in case my luggage gets lost. So
yes.
I've got a couple of days reserve. I got a letter from my surgeon to say if anybody needs to search Faisal, it needs to be done by a medical person. I've got a letter from cancer stating the same thing. And I go through airport security, and this guy pats, and he feels the bag, and he pulls, and I grab his hand. And also realizing grabbing his hand is not the right thing, and I just go, I got a letter. What I wasn't prepared for is that he didn't understand English.
Yeah.
You know, so that was out of my control. And then you just sit and you hope you make dua.
Sure.
And luckily he never pulled it off, because that could have been a fiasco.
Right.
I was married, just got married. We were on honeymoon. And it's something that hasn't happened for more than 2 years.
Yeah.
But a bag leaked while we were asleep. And, you know, that's humiliating.
Of course.
As much as you speak about, you know, there's this possibility that could happen. And so for it to happen.
Right.
And I've had to accept the fact that these things are going to happen.
Yeah. And I just want to ask you, because you spoke now and even about the impact that it could have happened on your wife, etc. So even though you've accepted, or you still, I think acceptance also is a constant work in progress, isn't it? Hey,
for sure.
What's the verses, and is that still there, that you have, that you sit with? What will others think? You know, what will others think, if anything, in the boardroom? Would the first fear not be, oh my word, how am I, they going to feel? What are they going to think? And, you know, how do you deal with that stigma, external stigma too from people, but also the internal stigma, the internal fears of, about others?
Mm.
How do you manage that?
That was very difficult for me. That day at the office, when I went back to work. So people knew Faisal was diagnosed with cancer. People at work knew that he was having surgery. They didn't know I had a stoma.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what that meant.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, even people listening right now, I don't think knows what a stoma is.
Mm-hmm.
And that incident in the boardroom, had me running off to the bathroom, and I sat there for over an hour, and I was in tears.
I'm sure.
What am I going to do here? And it took me an hour before I built up the courage to call one of my colleagues, to send someone from my team with my bags to the bathroom. And I snuck out of work, running down the stairs because I didn't want to get caught in the elevator because I had a mess on me.
Sure.
Sneaking out, getting home, changing, coming back to work. And you have different clothes on. And it took me a while to be courageous enough.
Yeah.
To have the
I just thought of the word courage.
To have that conversation at work to say that this is my situation.
Yeah.
I've had to ask them the sanitary towel dispensers that you usually find in a lady's toilet, to get onto the floor where we were, into the bathrooms that was closest to me, to get those in the men's bathroom so that if I needed to change a bag at work, I could do it in a sanitary, dispose of it in a sanitary manner. And again, I could only do this if I accepted my condition. It took me a while. As much as I'm putting my trust, there's this. Yeah. I've had to learn to, because as you're living, as life unfolds after the event, certain realities set in.
Yeah.
So there are things that happen that you are not, you cannot, there is nobody that can prepare you for it.
Absolutely.
That, you know, it unfolds.
Yeah.
And that brings me to another message where you asked about being happy again and, you know, having that happiness. My happiness isn't dependent on Yusra. My happiness is dependent on me. Mm-hmm. I'm the one responsible for my happiness. It's not put on to my children, onto friends or my wife.
Yeah.
We are responsible for our own happiness. And together with the loved ones, we become happy together.
Okay. So I think a beautiful point to conclude actually. Would you say that happiness, acceptance, courage, and courage would be different. Almost the quality or the value of the courage will be different at different times.
Yeah.
It's almost like it can be a small courage moment or a big courage moment. That work situation would have been a huge courage moment. But would you still say, and this is really a strong message for ourselves and for the, our listeners, would you say that happiness is a choice that you made?
That's exactly it. I chose to be happy. I chose to accept the fact that I have the stoma. I can't change it. Even my late mom, and this was stigmas that I faced out there. Why are you having this? I still get, can't they do an anal transplant for you? And I've had to some people, I had to be as crude as saying that, okay, so I have this anal transplant as you want, and keep in mind that the surgeon also had to remove part of the sphincter muscle. So I can't squeeze. You can, I can't. So do I have this stoma bag or do I wear a nappy? What are you going to feel more comfortable with? And that was the only way I could find to keep them.
Yeah.
Right.
And to keep them boundaried.
Exactly. And establishing your boundaries is important. It is important, and because it's about you and your sanity. You need to take charge of your well-being. And I ended up going to see a counselor to help me support myself. And it doesn't mean I was weak. And here's the weirdest thing of it all. That counselor didn't help me really. I did all the work.
But that
they guided me.
Absolutely. I'm so happy that you just said it, you know, because it's the help of the therapist or the counselor is about helping you to realize it's your journey. We're really just, you know, helping along and
it's
kind
just
of
a guide.
It's really just the guide, but the work it's done by you.
Yeah.
And the important thing for me about that is taking ownership of, by Allah, this is how far I've allowed myself to grow by Allah's grace.
Alhamdulillah.
You know, alhamdulillah. And on that note, you know, we need to greet you, and we've concluded our session for today. Next week, I'd like us to look at, we haven't even touched on, the support, the family, your children, your wife, Yusra's journey, you know, the where you're at right now. I mean, today's fabulous experience, but the marathons that you've encountered, and those would be the things that you gave to you to give to others. Yeah. And the importance of that connection. So shukran again. Shukran. We learn and we grow. And yeah, I can only stand and admire your courage, you know, really, and the choices that you've made that have gotten you to this point by Allah's grace. I salute you for that, Faisal. So shukran for being a part of the program and really encouraging others, because I think I'd like to think that although we're speaking about cancer, what we're actually speaking about, the human process, when trauma hits you, when change hits you, when loss hits you, this is really a description of how life unfolds. Exactly. and we have to do life in that way, isn't it?
Life is filled with the unexpected.
Absolutely.
I say life is like a very mock ad. If you call now, we'll also give you.
That's a good one. Faisal, shukran so much, and assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah.
So that concludes my conversation with Faisal Jacobs, the cancer survivor who's doing fabulous things. I'd like to think of him as an extraordinary person. Alhamdulillah, by the Creator's grace. Next week, inshallah, we will focus more, and this is about us growing from the experience that Faisal has, the life that he has walked and is still walking for the way forward, in encouraging us to be better for ourselves and others. So stay with us. Don't go away.